Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Into Each Life, Some Rain Must Fall show. We are celebrating the fact that up until the time we recorded this show, it had rained every day this month. Now, we're getting
a brief break.
Yeah, I know. We're getting a brief break as the show will go to air, and then probably the storms will be back. And I asked myself, you know, Rick, where did Into Each Life, Some Rain Must Fall?
Do you routinely talk to yourself?
Yes.
As it must be fun to watch.
All the time. That's why I'm on the radio. If we had any listeners.
There are other people in this room. You could argue you're talking to us.
I'm speaking into a microphone and there's no one listening. Now, I think I'm talking to myself.
You might suggest that they aren't getting it.
Fair enough.
Of course, then we got a different discussion going to happen.
The phrase came from Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, and I'm going to read the
Say that name again.
Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
Wadsworth?
Wadsworth.
Isn't that your middle name?
No, he was the village smithy. Remember? Did you ever?
The smithy.
Under the spreading chestnut tree?
No.
Longfellow. At any rate.
No.
This is the last... The Rainy Day is the name of the poem. Be still, sad heart, and cease repining. Behind the clouds is the sun still shining. Thy fate is the common fate of all. Into each life some rain must fall.
You know, the thing is, if you'd have done that as the promo for this show, we wouldn't have any listeners right now.
Because it has nothing to do with the show, but still, it's kind of fun. I'll tell you who does have something to do with the show. That's my co-host, the UK Manager of Communications Infrastructure, here to start the show by describing our web presence, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the shows at WMKY.org. That's right, WMKY.org. That is the Moorhead State Public Radio website. You got to do a little searching in the menus there, but you'll find Health Matters. Jump over to that page. You'll see a list of the more recent shows. There's links to the audio. There's some summaries of the shows in case you want to, you know, maybe try to get an idea of what's in the show. Or maybe you heard part of a show and you want to go back and hear the whole show and you remember a little bit about it. Sometimes the summaries are good enough to do that. But they're certainly right there at WMKY.org. After that, you have jumped all in and you have decided it's time to interact with Health Matters. I want to see what they're saying. I want to see what the conversation's about. Jump over to Facebook.com. Do a search for HM Radio Show or Facebook.com/HM Radio Show in your browser. And there you'll find the fan page devoted to Health Matters. There we post interesting factoids that are news articles, all kinds of things that are Facebook type posts. We certainly look at the comments, we look at the feedback. We're interested in show topics, and of recently we've had a couple of potential candidates. So we're certainly reviewing those, and believe it or not, a lot of times you can get a topic put on the show just by visiting our Facebook site. Like us and stay tuned.
Do you think if Anthony Davis has an eye browser?
One.
Just curious.
He just has one.
You know, that occurred to me, and this show is not starting off very well. Thanks for your part, but I am starting slow. This, our sponsor, the Tick Fixers, with their top 6 quick tick fixing tricks, reminding you ticks can't compete when you use DEET. Now, this is in honor of my wife. My wife, many people know, is a part of a group that tries to rescue stray dogs here in Rowan County. We had a dog at the house at the time we recorded this show. This dog loves to go dashing off into the woods. My wife, we start walking on the trails around our farm, and then they go pretty much everywhere. And this morning, she woke up covered with what is commonly called turkey mites. These are small nymph stage ticks, probably the Lone Star tick nymphs. But for whatever reason, I spent most of the early morning hours after we woke up pulling ticks off her back, stomach, and legs. These things bite in. When I got them, they caused a really bad rash reaction, and I don't like this at all. I wear DEET pretty much every time I go into the woods. My wife doesn't itch as much as I do. You would think, being a manly man such as myself, I would not itch much. But in fact, I really do itch a lot.
Really?
Yeah. I get bit by a tick.
How do you put it on a relative scale? So how do you know that you're an itcher?
Well, I know that I complain a lot more. We go out and we both get chiggers, and my chiggers annoy me a lot more than her chiggers do.
Well,
I mean, it's the same.
I guarantee you your chiggers annoy her quite a bit too.
Anyway, back to the tick fixers and their top 6 quick tick fixing tricks. We will give you 6 things not to do. Thing number one, do not use sharp forceps. You puncture that tick, that's not a good situation. Number two, don't crush, puncture, or squeeze the tick's body. If you squeeze the body, guess where the body contents go? They go out the tick's mouth, and since the tick is attached to you, they go into you. That's not a good idea. There can be infectious organisms, anything from Lyme disease or Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Not a good situation when the tick's abdominal contents are being injected into your blood. The other thing, don't apply noxious substances. Petroleum jelly, gasoline, nail polish to the tick. That just makes them mad. If you try to suffocate or smother a tick, you've got to remember they only breathe about 3 times an hour. And they've got a rich blood supply from you. So you're not going to suffocate that tick rapidly. And in the meantime, as it gets irritated, bad things would happen to you. Tip number 4, don't apply heat with a match or a hot nail. Once again, these type of things can cause burns, and they also may cause the tick to get excited and regurgitate its contents into you.
Ew.
I know, isn't it? All? But the
Ew.
Thing is, I mean, ticks are just bad news. There is
Ew.
Nothing tasteful about a tick. Absolutely nothing.
Well.
Don't use a twisting or jerking motion to remove the tick.
So,
and do not handle the tick with your bare hands. You know,
but now,
I do this all the time, handle the tick with my bare hands, but the experts say don't do that.
Have you this year?
Yeah. I was pulling ticks off my wife.
Well, but they're not plentiful this year, are they? I mean, I've noticed with all the rain and the weather, first off, you're not outside as much. I think that's probably the bigger issue. But something tells me the wet climate, I haven't had as big a tick problem at our house this year as in years past.
I agree, but I think as it dries up, I think we will start to see a very significant tick problem because, let's face it, wet weather is really what they like. It's just been surprising that they have not been more plentiful so far. So as best I can tell, I mean, you could argue, we always say this, if you have a cold winter, that should kill the ticks. It never does, but we always think that. Well, we had a winter here with 20 degrees below. I don't know, but somehow they seem to survive it. But technically, with that cold winter, maybe they're not as plentiful this year, but I think with this hot, long, wet spell that we've had, I think we're going to get into trouble going forward. At any rate, my wife's in trouble right now because she blundered into this, again, we call it turkey mite or nymph stage lone star tick nest. And these things just kind of crawled up her leg and went all over.
Ouch.
Unbeknownst to her. It's a mess. That's our sponsor.
Okay. Say it one more time.
The tick fixers and their top 6 quick tick fixing tricks. One announcement from the Northeast AHEC before we start the main part of the show. They are sponsoring a faculty development event on August 13th, 5:30 p.m. There's a reception, 6:30 p.m., an educational activity. This is Dana Schaefer, who's down at the University of Pikeville, the Kentucky College of Osteopathic Medicine, coming up to give a lecture on the differences between an MD and a DO. Nice thing for faculty to know, since we have many MDs and DOs in our region, many MD and DO students in our region as well. That's the Northeast AHEC, August 13th, 6:30 p.m., a lecture, a faculty development lecture by Dr. Dana Schaefer from the University of Pikeville, the Kentucky College of Osteopathic Medicine there. Rick, we have reached an historic moment in the history of Kentucky.
Oh, I thought you were going to say in the history of health matters.
No, I mean, not unless you know something I don't. The fact we're still on the air, but other than that, not much.
That's historic? No, that's not historic.
This is the longest we've ever been on the air.
And boy, have our listeners agreeing.
Yeah, it sure is. No, I was talking to some students, and so I went back and looked at the most recent data on causes of death for the state of Kentucky. You may be aware that...
So describe most recent.
Okay, most recent data is from the year 2013.
So you've got it. Okay, so it's 2 years old.
Yeah, so it's 2 years old. That's how long it takes to put the thing together and to tabulate it. And always, heart disease has been the number one killer. It still is the number one killer of Americans.
So you just took the fun out of this.
And the number one killer of Kentuckians. That's the way it's always been. And heart disease and cancer have been neck and neck for the past several years. Kentucky ranks first in the nation in our cancer deaths. We rank 7th in the nation in heart disease. And there was always a few more, 20, 30 more deaths in Kentucky due to heart disease and cancer. Well, in 2013, for the first time, we flipped. Cancer killed 10,085 Kentuckians. Heart disease killed 9,971 Kentuckians.
Wow.
Yeah, and this is going to happen nationwide. The reason is not that cancer deaths will rise somewhat because we are getting older. But if you look at a given age, your risk of cancer is actually lower than it was. Your risk of dying of cancer is lower than it was, but heart disease deaths are dropping faster than cancer-related deaths. And actually, both those numbers are fewer total people than died in Kentucky in 2012. So the numbers do drop, but heart disease is dropping faster than cancer deaths. Heart disease dropped from over 10,000 deaths to 9,971 deaths in the year 2013, and now cancer kills more Kentuckians than heart disease. Now, the reason I bring this up, well, the reason I read the Wadsworth Longfellow poem, one, because it was about rain, but the other thing is it was talking about the problem we have in Kentucky. Our number one cause of cancer death, lung cancer.
Right.
3,500 Kentuckians every year die of lung cancer. I'm sorry that lung cancer lives don't matter. You know, you've heard this Lives Matter campaign now. Unfortunately, to our legislature, we'd had the opportunity to pass a smoking ban to Kentuckians. It doesn't seem that these lung cancer deaths matter, but there are 3,500 of them every year. Colon cancer is number two, about 800. Breast cancer around 600. Prostate cancer around 400. Here's one that's kind of surprising. Kentucky is sixth in the nation in deaths from melanoma. 136 Kentuckians every year die of melanoma. It's a disease of young people. It's not anywhere near the most common cause of cancer death in Kentucky, but that's a lot of young people. And here's the surprising thing, Rick, and I don't understand this. Our rates of melanoma deaths are higher than Florida, higher than Texas, higher than California, higher than Hawaii.
Okay. Well, I mean, doesn't that lend itself to some type of, I mean, is it a genetic bias? Because, do the genetics stay in this region because that's where the families are?
Yeah.
I mean, is it something like that? Are we talking about, is it the fact that Kentucky's got a higher artificial tanning industry? I mean, is it something that maybe natural sunlight is better than electronic sunlight?
Well, first of all, I think that is definitely true. The problem with electronic irradiation is you just really don't know how much irradiation you're getting. We've been around the sun for a long time, and we have some idea. It appears that melanoma is related to the number of severe sunburns you get.
Right.
Maybe not to overall sun exposure, because some of the highest rates of melanoma are in Washington, Oregon, Vermont, New Hampshire, and that doesn't make any sense in terms of sun exposure.
Well, yeah, because but I mean, perhaps, they're not even out during the winter. I mean, they're kind of a longer winter. They're probably, you know, yeah.
Yeah, but perhaps they get more sunburns. I don't know that. Maybe I don't know if people in Texas and Florida get sunburns at a young age as much as these people do, but it's possible. But at any rate, you know, the other possibility, Rick, is we don't have any dermatologists in Kentucky.
You think it's just not getting detected.
Not getting detected, not getting treated properly.
So by the time you find your way to the ER, it's already too far progressed.
Yeah, because melanoma spreads rapidly. It's the one skin cancer that we really fear because of that rapid spread.
So Tony, why have we not? I mean, breast cancer obviously is a problem. We've come up with personal screening methods where you can, I know there's been some controversy whether that's good or whether that's accurate or bad or whatever, but it seems to me like we need to start some kind of a teaching campaign to teach people to look for melanomas.
Yeah. And
because, right, I mean, this has to start with you.
Right. Without dermatologists, we're going to have to figure out how to explain to people how to screen themselves for melanoma. Maybe screening works. We don't even know for sure that repeated skin exams works. But
well, let's go off and do a Google search. We'll figure it out.
We will. Why don't you go off and take a break, get something to drink, come back for our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Health Matters. This is the second fractional portion, and I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Into Each Life Some Rain Must Fall show. We are quoting Longfellow to
Wadsworth.
Wadsworth Longfellow, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, and it also seems apropos to our situation in Kentucky here for the past month. Our sponsor for the second time, the Tick Fixers, and their top six quick tick fixing tricks. We had six things not to do, and let's review those very quickly. Don't use sharp forceps. Don't crush, puncture, or squeeze the tick's body. Don't apply noxious substances the tick, you just make them mad. Don't put a heated match or a hot nail, you'll burn yourself. Don't use a twisting or jerking motion. Do not handle the tick with your bare hands. Now here's what you need to do. Number one, avoiding tick bites is absolutely key. Wear long pants, tuck the pant legs into the socks. I cannot tuck my pants legs into the socks.
I try to be part of the cool kid group and I can't do that. I cannot do that.
Yeah. If skin exposure is unavoidable, apply an insect repellent. And the insect repellents we talk about, DEET is best. And 10 to 35% DEET is probably the best there. And it's not necessary to go to higher concentrations of that. Permethrin can be used on clothes, and it lasts through several clothes washings. Those are the two most common products we use. Number two, remove the tick as soon as possible. The risk of disease transmission increases after 24 hours of attachment. That's what my wife and I were doing this morning. Three, use blunt angled forceps, not sharp tweezers. Don't puncture that tick. Four, once the tick is removed, wash the bite area with soap and water. And five, routine antibiotics not necessary. Six, take a look at that tick before you flush it or whatever you're going to do with the tick. Brown in the size of a pencil point. Those are the deer ticks, which can transmit Lyme disease. They are moving south, and they will probably, there have been some cases reported from Kentuckians who did not travel. Brown with a white collar, size of an eraser. That's the common dog tick, the one we all grew up with. Don't carry Lyme disease, but can carry Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Brown to black, white splotch on the back, the Lone Star tick, named after the white splotch. It bites aggressively, doesn't necessarily go to a hidden place or a hairy place to bite. It will bite pretty much anywhere, and sometimes it can cause a significant skin reaction, apparently more so in me than in my wife. That's our sponsor, the Tick Fixers, their top six quick tick fixing tricks. Reminding you, ticks can't compete when you use DEET. I'm going to stay with this a minute, Rick, and talk about mosquitoes. And
it is kind of your agenda.
Do you have something you want to say?
No, I yield the floor to you.
Okay. Well, no, we were talking during the break, and I want to give you fair say about what you talked about I do not like the way our legislature, especially this past session, approached the idea of a statewide smoking ban. We are a state that has the nation's number one lung cancer death rate. We are losing thousands of Kentuckians a year, and inactivity in the face of that level of life loss just doesn't make sense. We're in the process right now of arming our military recruiters and moving them out of prominent places. We are revising police approaches, all for many less deaths than we have in Kentucky due to lung cancer, and yet we seem to be inactive on that. Your point is, though, lung cancer, 90% of lung cancers are caused by smoking. So we can talk about legislative inactivity, but we ourselves, our families, our physicians, our medical system has to emphasize the importance of not smoking.
Right. And I know that people get addicted to these things when they're 14 years old and they grow up with longstanding addictions. I did not smoke a long time, Tony, but I smoked for 3 to 4 years and then finally decided it was the healthiest thing to do was to quit smoking. And that was in the year 1989, I get it. I've obviously don't have 40 years of smoking I'm trying to quit, but frankly, we're not going, and this does not to be crass, we're not going after the people that have been smoking 40 years. We want the people to never start. We want the people that have been smoking 3 or 4 years and they're under 20 to not smoke anymore, because they're the ones that are going to have the biggest impact on these numbers in 20 years. So we can yell at the legislature, and I absolutely agree with it. We can target the insurance companies and say, look, you should put a bigger price on insurance for against smokers to try to encourage them not to smoke. There's tons of things we can do as a society in the public health area where we can try to change health policy to drive this. But let's not forget, we are personally responsible for our own being. And we can get upset when people start trying to regulate, when people start trying to take our rights away, but that also means we have to be responsible with our rights. And so if you don't decide, if you can't find the willpower or the medical help or whatever you need to stop smoking, then you are in fact playing a role in that statistic. Whether you like it or not, whether it's a number whether it's something you want to hear said or not, the fact is you become just as complacent, or you become just as guilty as the legislature.
Wow. Well said, Rick.
Granted, nobody likes to hear from an ex-smoker because they tend to rail more than anybody.
That's right. Palm Olive called. They want their soapbox back.
Exactly.
But I think, honestly, I agree with you. It is a combination of trying to create the environment where smoking is discouraged, and also making sure that people know that they have to give effort as well.
And here, some full disclosure here. This topic, at some point, we are going to get a handle on the smoking. And then what's next? Greasy cheeseburgers. The obesity. that's going to be another personal responsibility thing, and I'm fairly guilty in that respect. So, you know, it's something I try to fight every day, and people who know me and then listen to the show probably are going to approach me and say, you stop eating hamburgers, I'll quit smoking. And it's a tough thing to do, but I will take responsibility for the fact that my health isn't what it's supposed to be.
And that's what we all do. We all need to move our health in a positive direction wherever we are.
Now, unless I have a heart attack and fall over on you and injure you, my fatness is probably not going to hurt you, unlike smoking and the secondhand nature of it. So we got to be kind of careful. They're not exactly the same.
Switching gears.
You sure you don't want to talk some more about it?
No.
I'm going to do like you. I'm just never going to stop. I'm not going to give you a way in so that you know. Because that's what happened. I wanted to say this last time, and you just blew right past me.
Rick's rant. That's why I'm giving you this chance, because as the co-host, you occasionally have something
don't
to say.
Don't you always say co-medical host?
Co-medical host, yep.
Yeah, because it's not a true co-host.
That's true. It is a co-medical host. Write that down, read it back, and think about it.
So now, now you have like 6 extra minutes that you don't have to worry about.
Thank you. Very thoughtful of you. This is Dr. Audrey Linhart. She's from the entomology branch of the Division of Parasitic Diseases and Malaria at the CDC, reminding us mosquitoes transmit diseases that kill as many as 750,000 people worldwide a year. And there are three diseases, actually, in the United States. West Nile virus, which is widespread throughout the United States, causes, again, a flu-like symptom, but occasionally will progress to an encephalitis, which can be severe and have long-term sequelae. There's something called dengue. There's something called chikungunya, which we have talked about a lot, that is widespread throughout the Caribbean and being transmitted now on U.S. soil in southern Florida. We expect it to get to the Gulf states and the Gulf Coast soon, because it has so widely and now it's interspersed throughout the Caribbean. There's no drugs available for West Nile dengue or chikungunya. We do not have a vaccination, and no drugs are available. So the best thing you can do is try to avoid mosquito bites. And this is a little more important than it was back when I was growing up, and you just slapped the mosquito and you just scratched, and I scratched more, obviously, than my wife did. There are 4 EPA-registered active ingredients that provide hours of protection against disease-carrying mosquitoes. They are DEET, which is our personal favorites. This is on-off, on-cutter, Sawyer, Ultrathon, and other products. There's something called IR3535 that is marketed as IR3535, Skin So Soft, Bug Guard Plus Expedition, and Skin Smart. Oil of lemon eucalyptus, or Ole. I sort of like that. Oil of lemon eucalyptus, that is on Repel Off Botanicals. Repel and Off Botanicals. Picaridin, also known as KBR 3023. That's on Bay Repel and Cutter Advanced, Skin So Soft, Bug Guard Plus. So these are some of the products that will last for hours and repel mosquitoes. And if you are planning on traveling, going to an outdoor place, particularly this year, if you're planning on going to the Caribbean, you need to be very cautious about mosquito bites. They can turn out to give you a lot more grief than they have in years past. We'll talk more about applying skin mosquito repellents in another show, but I did want to remind you of the products and remind you of the danger. As you go out for your summer activities, make sure that you consider if you're going to be in an area of high mosquitoes concentration and to take your mosquito repellent. Next up, Consumer Reports, Rick.
Excellent. Are you a member?
I am not. Are you?
Yes.
I figured you would be, because you've got to see what they say about electronic.
Well, and believe it, in my role and you know, over the course of time, I've become a source where people ask me, what do you think about this? And so, you know, while I have my own personal experiences, I also like to mix in some worldly views. And I think they do a pretty good job of evaluating product.
Now, do you read Consumer Reports to see what they have in this month's issue?
No.
Or do you actually just research a specific product?
Specific product. I'll go in and target research and see, okay, well, what's, you know, obviously before you go starting to look at a new car, you probably ought to go look at some information on, you know, you start making large purchases, it's always a good idea to research the options and don't overanalyze them, but certainly don't underanalyze them either. This, you know, can cost you.
I feel bad. We don't do that. We probably should. The point I'm making is their September issue, they talk about laundry detergents, and they will not recommend...
It's good if you use it.
They will not recommend laundry pods containing liquid detergent because of the risk to children. 8 different single-use packets rated very good at cleaning. Not any significant difference between the top three, but unfortunately, the risks to kids are still bad, and the health incidence involving these pods continues to climb. Through June 2015, 6,000 incidents involving pods and kids younger than age 6 have been reported to the American Association of Poison Control Centers. This is ingestion, inhalation, contact with the eyes and skin, health problems after exposure. They've got wheezing, gasping, sleepiness, vomiting, and also corneal abrasions, actually eye abrasions. So 6,000. Last year, there were nearly 11,000 reports. Actually, there were 11,700, sorry, last year, and almost 11,000 in 2013. This is what the editors say. Given the continued danger, we've made the decision not to include the pods on our list of recommended products. We strongly urge households where children younger than 6 are present to skip these pods altogether. This doesn't apply to laundry or dishwasher pods that have powder because there are less severe injuries. These are liquid pods, liquid laundry detergent pods. They are death to kids. Procter & Gamble says we take every incident seriously, which I'm not going to go hard on Procter & Gamble. I'll just say that, well, you know, these pods, Rick, actually were a good idea. We tend to put too much detergent in our laundry. We are polluting the environment with too much detergent.
Tony,
you put those pods in.
When was the last time you did laundry?
I actually put a pod in. I am Mr. Laundry Guy. Last week, I put a pod in. We've been, again, because it's been so wet, you go outside, you get mud all over everything. We have been doing laundry almost daily at our house, especially with those dogs.
So you've done one in the last 50?
I am not the big daily laundry person. All right, so let's all laugh at Tony a second. How about Rick? How often do you do laundry?
I bought my wife a new washing machine and dryer.
This in any way absolve you from the fact of doing the laundry, the fact that you bought her a machine?
It's called pivoting to a new topic. That's what we're going to do. We're going to pivot right there to a new topic.
Okay.
So we're going to... So your pod thing is a great thing. You're right. We need the quantities are always too much. We always waste a lot.
Yeah,
but, you know, you would think, why would the vendors care? Well, they make money when you waste
that's
it.
That's the point. I mean, that's the great point. This is really a nice environmental thing to do. Saying, look, we are actually selling less product, but we're increasing market share because these darn things are so easy to use. Just pop one in your washer. So they figure, I mean, as a business decision, it was risky. It was calculated. They decided they would gain market share, and they have, and they are gaining market share while protecting the environment. The problem is these pods, especially with the liquid detergent, they look like candy. They look great. If you're a kid under 6 years old, they look like something you want in your mouth or you want to play with, and that's where these kids are getting into trouble. They are just too pretty, and they're too candy-like.
So did Consumer Reports also not do the dishwashing pods because they're just as pretty and just as cute?
But they are, apparently the powder's not as bad as the liquid.
Well, it's not all powder. I mean, it's got both the dry rinse in or the clear rinse stuff. And it's got like two different liquids and thing. Because, yes, Tony, I do know what goes on in our dishwasher. Do you? You don't have a dishwasher, do you? You are the dishwasher.
No, we have a dishwasher. It's a bit old. We do have a dishwasher.
So you don't use the pods with them?
Oh, we have pods. We don't have kids under 6.
Well, yeah.
As you know, my grandkids are not even in North America.
Right.
So we are, at this point, we are as toxic as we want to be because our kids are not going to visit in the next month. I can guarantee you that.
But you do dishes regularly?
I don't do dishes regularly. No. We have a division of labor at my house.
Yeah,
we do.
It sounds like it's uneven.
All right.
But she doesn't cut trees.
That's right. I am Mr. Lightbulb.
How many trees have you cut this year?
Well, we've had a lot go down.
And you've taken care of all of them?
Yeah.
Oh, you're a good man. Mine are still laying there ready to be cut up.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, you want to come help me this weekend?
We'll get Woody DeBree to help us out. He needs to hide.
It's his fault.
Anyway. That's right. But I do vacuum him when it's done. We don't either one of us. We don't mess with
that. Okay, so pods are good or bad? Pods, how do we sum this up?
I think pods are good for the environment, but if you have children under age 6 in the house at any time, first of all, you should store them up. That's the thing. Don't put them under the sink. Don't put them where the kids can get them. And really, it's not good to have them in your house if you got young kids.
Sounds like they need to wrap them in some kind of dissolvable cover. That way, it's dull and boring. It's not the bright colors, like you said. You know, it looks like a toy, you know, or candy or something. There got to be something they can do.
Yeah.
You know what they could do?
So all right, here we go.
Get in cahoots with the people who make the washing machines, and just like you put, like, obviously, like bullets in like you have a magazine for a gun. Sell whole magazines of these things, right?
Heard.
No, sell entire magazines of pods.
Automatic washing machine.
Wouldn't it be nice if you never had to put anything in it at all? It just automatically dropped a pod in, or you put in a whole bunch of pods.
I think you got to load that sucker.
Think about it. 20 loads per shot.
If you don't load the washing machine, you don't know it's working. That's something that's a little too automatic. You know, there are things that are there, like the closed door button on the elevator, right? They're going to close. You know they're going to close.
Why do you push it?
You want to be in charge.
But that doesn't work. Electronically, you're usually not helping.
That's right, but it's there. That's my point.
And in my mind,
you've got to load the washing machine.
In my mind, I've already assessed a $10 stupid fee to you for pushing it, right? Because you didn't help. You just had to show that you could push a button.
But the point is the same. You put the detergent in. You drive the elevator. These are two things. People mm-hmm. have to do this. I think your automatic magazine-loaded multi-wash washer, I will never know if there's detergent or not.
Well, you don't do laundry enough to care. I'm trying to make things easy on her.
I would care about this. She pushes the button. She pushes the closed door button on the elevator. You never push it. You never push the closed door button.
Only if I know that the elevator system itself. And this is where the technology background comes in.
No, this is great. Rick's sitting there, and he's saying he uses logic to determine whether or not to push the closed door button on the elevator.
Well, yeah, because traditionally, most elevators, when you push when you push the buttons on it and it's already lit up or something, it doesn't do anything.
Right.
If you push the close button, a lot of times it won't do anything.
A lot of times. We're now at a lot of times.
Different elevator systems work differently.
Yeah, but so you go in and you get out the elevators on your owner's manual or search it in Consumer Reports and you say
no point in pushing it. No, it's personal experience.
So.
It becomes personal experience. It's when you're on obviously we used to ride the same elevators over and over, and I knew that elevator, you can push it all you want, it's not going to work.
And so you just didn't bother.
That's when I just started assessing fees.
Okay, fine. One more.
What? You got one finger up?
All right, I can do this one really quick, okay?
I'll shut up.
Okay. Women's soccer team won the World Cup. Yay, women's soccer, right? This is July 10th. There was a confetti parade, and I never understood confetti parades. You know, how do you do confetti parades? Well, apparently, the people in New York don't know either. Atlas Packaging Company, 2 tons of strip, cut, blank, newsroll confetti. They passed it out. They had 2 tons, and they handed it out to more than 50 buildings. They're going to have a confetti, we used to call them ticker tape parade, for the women's soccer team, right? They handed out 2 tons of confetti. They cleaned up 34 tons of confetti. Oh, somebody's spiking the confetti. What are they spiking it with? It turns out they're spiking it with medical records.
Shredded up?
Shredded medical records. Put them together. You got names. You got social security numbers. You got prescriptions. All of that you can do from the confetti rained down on the women's soccer team.
We got 14 extra, tons? Is that what we said?
Yeah. It was 2 in, 34 picked up. We got 32 tons of shredded stuff coming out of the buildings that was not supplied by the suppliers. We also got no time, Rick. We're out.
Another segment.
We're going to take a break and come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Into Each Life, Some Rain Must Fall show.
Come on, say it. It's by Wadsworth.
It is by Henry. Why you like that? Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
Would you name your kid Wadsworth?
I suppose, probably. I bet you his father-in-law.
How do you get that? Did somebody walk by Wadsworth and go, "Hey, what do you think the Wadsworth?" I mean, I don't know. Maybe he had a big thing of money. I don't know. What's the deal?
Yeah.
Who would name their kid Wadsworth?
The son-in-law of a Wadsworth.
Really?
Yeah, but you ask yourself,
you don't think somebody would want to break the vicious cycle?
Well, he must have liked it because he could have been Henry Longfellow or H.W. Longfellow, and he chose not to be. He chose to be Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. That's the way we know him.
How do we know?
And you got to ask yourself, why would the guy go as Henry Wadsworth Longfellow? Well, he's a poet. He likes words, and I think he liked the way Henry Wadsworth Longfellow flowed.
Why put 2 words down when 3 will do?
Well, I think it flowed nicely. It has a rhythm of itself. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow sounds pretty good. Henry Longfellow fellow? Eh, not as good. Maybe he just made up Wadsworth because it was
Anthony
a good word.
Anthony Wadsworth Weaver. How's that?
No, it's three syllables and then it drops to two. It's no good.
Yeah, yeah.
Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, it's two going to three.
Yeah, okay. You're picky.
So it's Weaver Wadsworth Anthony, which... I'm not taking that name. Absolutely not. This, but you got
we'll
me
do
off
anything
my
to kill
game
time.
Here.
You
the
know that?
Sponsor of this show is Tick Fixers with their top six quick tick fixing tricks, reminding you ticks can compete when you use DEET. Six things to do. This is what you do. You avoid tick bites. That's the key thing. Wear long pants. Tuck them into your socks. You're going to look like a dork, but you're not going to have tick bites. You will live. Inspect your skin after you come in. Get those ticks off rapidly. If you cannot avoid exposure, then apply insect repellent to your skin or clothing, and I actually spray a ring around where my trousers and my shoes meet, and this is DEET. It's products with 10 to 35% DEET are adequate, and 10% is effective for about 2 hours. More than 30% DEET, don't use on kids. Don't use more than 50% DEET. It really doesn't do anything extra and a little more toxic. Permethrin, it's sold as brand name Permanome, pesticide that kills ticks and mites, applied to clothes, and it lasts through several washings. Permethrin, not for your skin, but it is for the clothes. Tip number two, ticks best removed within 24 hours. Tip number three, a blunt, medium tip, or angled forceps, not a sharp pair of tweezers. You may puncture the tick. That would be bad for you and certainly bad for the tick. Four, once the tick's removed, wash the area with soap and water. And five, routine antibiotics not needed. Six, remember to check the color of the tick to know what you might need to look for. Brown in the size of a pencil point are deer ticks. That's Lyme disease. Brown with a white collar, size of a pencil eraser. These are bigger ticks, the ones that I grew up with. Those are the dog ticks. No Lyme disease, but Rocky Mountain spotted fever is possible if they've been bit in for more than 24 hours. The black tick with a white spot on the back, the Lone Star tick, a vicious biter, can do induce something called starry, which is southern tick associated rash illness, a big red blotch that spreads out from the bite. When I get bit by those ticks, they also tend to itch more, but as you have heard from my wife, her statements, I apparently am an itchy wimp.
You are. You're needy.
I'm histamine needy, I'll put it that way. First article in this section.
What I don't understand is, how can you be that way, yet poison ivy flees from you?
Well,
I don't understand.
Yeah, I know. I guess the thing is, if I reacted to poison ivy, maybe I would be used to itching, and tiggers and chicks wouldn't bother me so much. But tiggers and chicks really bother me.
Dude,
tiggers and ticks.
You know, tiggers and... Say that again, man.
Well, it works both ways.
So what does Winnie the Pooh do for you?
Yeah, no. Well, there's a lot wrong with it. My goodness. That was the Tick Fixer's top.
You know what? No, it could have been much worse, Tony.
I tell you what, if you see any tiggers or chicks out there, what you need to do is just run away or spray them with something. I don't know. Use a forceps, whatever you think
you
should do.
It's a good thing you found your kit.
That's absolutely right. First one, this came from actually Time Magazine, July 15th. It was a report of an article published in the Journal of Medical Internet Research, which should attract your attention, Mr. Consumer Reports. This is from David Moore, who's the director of the Center for Behavioral Intervention Technologies at Northwestern University in Chicago. They took 28 people who were ages 19 to 58 from Craigslist. They advertised on Craigslist, so they got these techno-savvy people, and they tinkered with their smartphones with some location and usage monitoring software, stuck that on. And then they, at the start of the study, they asked them the standard questions that we ask to screen for depression. And it turns out half of the subjects, and this is pretty common, had some symptoms of depression. They were not diagnosed with clinical depression, but half of them had some subjects of depression, half did not. Then for 2 weeks, the phones tracked their GPS location every 5 minutes, and they pinged the users with questions about their mood several times a day. Now, Rick, you're still using your fitness stuff, you know, how many steps you took today. There it is. He's showing me his wrist, which is very excellent for a radio program. Thank you for that demonstration for our audience. But at any rate, you're still tracking.
Maybe I had to step out for a few minutes, and maybe I'm not even here.
Yeah. The phone data, they asked how many places, they showed how many places the participants visited each day, how much time they spent there, how frequently they used their phones, and then they looked at that and tried to correlate it with their depression test scores. It turns out people don't like to answer questions. And if you have an app that keeps asking you questions, eventually you just ignore it. Right?
Correct. Right.
You just turn it off.
Mine keeps telling me over and over you should sleep more. And I say, boy, there's a good idea.
Yeah. Tell me something new. Well, Moore and his team, they found that the phone data were better than questions because of that fatigue. And this is what he says. People who spend more time in just one or two places, say they go to work, go back home, go to work, they're more likely to have higher depression scores. When they moved around, that was important. People who stuck to a regular pattern were less depressed. It turns out with depression, it throws you off your regular pattern. You move around more at nighttime. You don't do what you usually do. What your normal routine gets thrown off. And then finally, they spent 68 minutes using their phones each day. People without depression, only 17 minutes. That was surprising to me. And this was published July 15th. This is fairly recent.
So,
these are 19 to 58-year-olds, 17 minutes on their phone if they're not depressed. The ones who had high depression scores, 68 minutes on their phone.
So they need people.
Well, they talk to people, but the other thing is they may put things off. They may not even be talking on the phone. See, what they may do is they say, well, you know, I could go to work, I could tackle that project, or you know what, I could play Angry Birds or something. I think I'll just sit here and play.
So
Angry
that was
Birds.
Just on the phone, not talking on the phone.
That's right. Okay. That's right. Using the phone, going in and using an app, they do talk more, but it's a way of avoiding other tasks, is the theory of the Chicago guys. That's what they think. Spending lots of time at home linked to depression, and phone data could predict with 87% accuracy whether or not people had symptoms of depression. That is, when you look at that phone data and you link that to the questionnaires, they could predict who had the positive questionnaires just looking at the phone data. And I've seen this phone data, especially this positional phone data, Rick, everything from earthquakes. It's like everybody's phone suddenly shifts and you know there's an earthquake. So if you're tracking mass data, you would be able to tell an earthquake by the GPS shifts.
Right.
You got people with Parkinson's disease, they walk slower, so their phones move slower than people without. So you can detect movement disorders. Apparently you can detect depression. The problem is, do you really want your phone broadcasting this information about you?
Well, and I think, Tony, we've not gotten to a point electronically to increase or consistently provide enough battery life to where you're not just like constantly charging whatever said device is. I mean, let's be honest. Can you go a whole day without charging your phone?
I can't even go 6 hours.
Yeah. So, and I'm finding that this thing on my wrist, the more I ask it to do, I mean, at first I was getting 3 to 4 days. Now I'm 2 to 3 days. And so as we start checking, leaving the and then that's with it checking my heart rate every 10 minutes or 15 minutes. So now let's say we're going to start to find what you're talking about from a big data standpoint. You've got to have a lot of data points, which means you got to collect that data very rapidly and over again. That takes up battery life. And so the battery technology that we got on our wrists and our pockets, it's still not, I don't think, there to give the kind of lifespan we're talking about. So yeah, it's a great idea. Love it. Think it'll come, but it's going to take some time to get the miniaturization and the batteries dealt with.
Right. I mean, think about it. You're monitoring blood pressure, you're monitoring pulse. This thing can also monitor your position and how much you're walking. Let's say you do have Parkinson's disease, and let's say I start a new medicine. If I see your phone moving faster in this data, then I figure that medicine's working for your Parkinson's disease in the same way that we could track the effect of a blood pressure medicine on your blood pressure. They have the ability to track a lot more than we are tracking. It's just a little scary because these things get published. The earthquake data was actually published without anybody's permission. You know, they just tracked a mass of people and watched what happened
how do you think an earthquake area. So do you think it's appropriate that they're capturing your movement data without your permission? Or is that what you're saying they did?
I'm saying right now it is perfectly legal, and the companies actually want to do more of it rather than less of it. And there are no there's no moral imperative not to collect that data, so it is being collected. Now, we have to decide where we stand on this. If we simply just ignore it, then the companies will certainly collect it because they can use it for a lot of things.
I hope so. I mean, I think it's a good idea. I like the big data, but you know, there's still a lot of conspiracy theorists. There's still a lot of people who don't necessarily want to be a part of any kind of big data strategies, and so that's why you look at places like Google, where they, you know, are figuring out algorithms and how to search people's searches, and you know, trying to mine through just basic general data that's not really person specific to create trends and stuff like that. I think that's why you're seeing that be so, I think, fairly successful right now.
Right. Do you think it's moral that we contribute our data? Should we just, no one should look at us? The problem is, of course, obviously anyone could tease out my data and figure out how I spent my day.
Sure, absolutely.
But is it, do I have some obligation to contribute that society data so we can track earthquakes and find out where the influenza seems to be peaking at a given time. We could do a lot of this from searches and phone call records.
But the same thing exists with vaccinations, right? I mean, we could contribute to the greater good by vaccinating ourselves, or we could just deal with having chicken pox or the measles. Most people choose to be part of the greater good and get the vaccination. I mean, it's similar. I think it's a similar kind of topic. I personally don't have any problem with being part of feedback groups or providing anonymous data, but that's a different philosophy from different walks of life. I mean, I know people that I work with that absolutely turn off every kind of electronic signature that would identify anything associated with them. And, you know, I don't know if that's a protection mechanism. I don't know if they just, you know, my mind doesn't work the same as theirs. So it's very difficult for me to put myself in their shoes and go, what's the hold up here? Why would you not want to turn on this so that it can track you? I mean, say what you will about some of the browsers when you open them up, you know, because browsers track what you do, right? If you don't know how to turn off some of that stuff, they'll track what you do. And have you ever noticed that you'll go and you'll do a search for something, and then 2 days later, you're looking at your browser and that targeted ads that are just for you happen to be about that exact same thing that you were looking at 2 days ago?
Yeah, I was looking for a pump, a well pump to replace my well pump. And all of a sudden, everywhere I looked, you know, I would go look at some technical article, and off on the side, there were advertisements for water pumps.
That's because you provided data back to them, and they used that as a targeted search, and that advertisers are willing to pay through the roof for a targeted ad placement because that's a better opportunity for them to sell a product. So it's something they do, but a lot of people disagree with it. That doesn't necessarily contribute to the greater good. It's just a feature that some people just like. I mean, I'd much rather see ads related to what I've been doing as opposed to cold calls, so to speak. But I think big data is the same way. I think, you know, we have to get to a point where for the big data to really be valid, we all kind of have to buy in. And I think there has to be some way that the companies or the big data earns our trust. And I think that's a harder problem. I think there's going to be a lot of people that they're going to really have trouble with that trust. And then, of course, when does public safety trump trust? And, you know, at that point, when they see you walking around outside of a nuclear power plant, at what point does that get reported? I mean, you know, so there's a ton of just policy and issues around that. But I mean, ultimately, what you're talking about, Tony, is really cool. I mean, it'd be great if we had some way to use that data in a very constructive way and tell us the things that make us better as a society. Unfortunately, everybody worries about what makes us worse.
Yeah, well, we have decided to give up. We've decided to, on a limited fashion, again, whether it's gun control or whether it's taxes on soft drinks, our individual freedoms, in many cases, trump something that might actually improve the general health. And I don't know where this is going to turn out. I think, though, it's important for us to talk about it. It's important for us to think about what we expect out of big data, because certainly a lot of data is being collected on us currently without our knowledge.
Don't you think it's going to take some time for the whole big data thing to really work its way through both the court systems and our own internal, you know, mental awareness?
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's just going to take some time. And I think the beauty here is it took a lot longer in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. It gradually gets shorter and shorter for us to adopt or deal with some new technology. So, I mean, what, Facebook ran its course with the kids in about 9 months, right?
It
took a while for that to happen in the, like, auto industry, you know? I mean, so anyway, I think the odds are that this whole big data thing is going to happen inside of 10 years.
Fair enough. I got one.
I left you enough time for one more thing.
One more thing. And you'll like this one too. The FDA.
Hey, I need to clarify something. You made me look stupid in the last segment.
Okay, all
because
right.
Because you're apparently a button pusher. I did not understand fully that you were talking about the close button. You said it 3 times. I didn't hear it. What I mean is when the button's already lit up on the 3, you're going to the 3rd floor and you walk in and push that 3 hoping that it'll close the door.
The closed door button
that won't
closes
work.
The door marginally faster, but pushing the 3 button twice or 3 times is not better than pushing the 3 button once.
No, the 3 button depends on how the elevator is set up. In some cases, the 3 has been known to go ahead and close the door, but in most cases, it won't.
Okay, fair enough. So I got my Tiggers and Chicks, and you got your door closed buttons, and the show is just really not gone.
Come on,
well,
it's
the
way
start.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
You didn't. I mean, it's free.
It's summer. Yeah, this is a vacation, and apparently Rick and I took our vacations early this year.
And most people have turned it off by now anyway, so let's go.
June 22nd, FDA approved a device that helps blind people see with their tongue. This is... I got to tell you, I love this thing.
La, 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 la. I don't see you, Tony.
Right, this is it. If you use it with a cane or assistance dog, it can enhance your ability to, it says about tasting the light. It's called BrainPort V100.
Sounds like the snake way
of doing BrainPort V100. It looks like a square plastic lollipop. It goes in your mouth and sits on your tongue. And then there's a video camera on your sunglasses. So you got your sunglasses, a wire to a little white wafer-like thing that sits on your tongue. As light hits the sunglasses, as they get an image, they create that image with electrical impulses felt on your tongue as vibrations. This is a brilliant idea of an American neuroscientist, Paul Bakirita, who died in 2006, sensory substitution. If we can somehow map visual images onto your tongue with vibrations, you will be able to see. FDA came to the decision after review of safety and effectiveness. 69% of 74 BrainPort V100 users. After a year's training, they succeeded in recognizing objects. The device leaves a metallic taste in the mouth, gives them a burning or stinging sensation, but that's a bit, that's pretty much all. Approved for sale in Europe in 2013, and now FDA approved in America, a little lollipop that sits on your tongue, hooks into sunglasses, and lets you see with your tongue. Can we see if we can get off the air?
Nope, it didn't work. Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Spencer Johnson and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supporting folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
Health Matters is a health radio show for adult males who have low or no testosterone.
It is not known if Health Matters is safe or effective in children under 18 years old. Radio shows that are applied to the skin may have different doses, strengths, or application instructions that may lead to different levels of testosterone in your body.
Health Matters can transfer from your body to others. This can happen if other people come in contact with the area where Health Matters was heard.
Unexpected signs of puberty. That's right. Unexpected signs of puberty have appeared in young children who were accidentally exposed to radio shows through skin-to-skin contact with men using health radio products like Health Matters.
Women and children should avoid contact with the unwashed or unclothed area where Health Matters has been heard. We second that. If a woman or child makes contact with the Health Matters application area, the contact area on the woman or child should be washed well with soap and water right away.
Do not get that radio show on you. Avoid tiggers and chicks at all costs. And whatever you do, don't take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change
push
in your life.
Push that 3 button.
And tune in next week as we explain how to keep your veins varicose and your enemies closer on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.